On Tech News Today, Twitter is remaking itself in the image of Facebook, but have they gone too far this time? Plus, Google buys a startup that converts your photos into city guides, and a developer mom creates an app that forces kids to call parents back. All that and more coming up right now on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Monday, August 18th, 2014. This episode is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is an easy and affordable way to help you learn. Instantly stream thousands of courses created by experts on business, software, web development, graphic design, and more. For a free trial, visit lynda.com/TNT. That's LYNDA.com/TNT. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT. Tech News Today is the show where we talk about the tech news with a journalist who report it. Welcome to the show. I'm Mike Elgin, and with me today, behind the controls, is the one and only Jason Howell.
Oh, hello.
Jason Howell of Ice Bucket Challenge fame.
Yes.
You dumped something on your head Friday. What's the deal?
Well, we were talking about the Ice Bucket Challenge and how much of a viral thing it has been on the internet and on Facebook on last Friday's Tech News Tonight. And then we kind of got together and we were like, how do you cover this and not do it yourself? So I ended up doing it. The unfortunate thing is, it was in the studio, right?
Sitting right where I'm sitting right now.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, it was kind of, but it was a little less water, too much ice, not enough water.
Yeah.
So I felt kind of guilty. So I ended up giving to ALS anyways over the weekend. You know, it's kind of a twofer in that.
Good, because you didn't have enough water?
I felt guilty. Come on. It's an ice bucket with ice water challenge, and it was mostly ice.
Jason,
actually, I was sitting in a pool of ice water, but I didn't feel like I had it covering me.
There are expensive electronics built into the floor directly under where you did this challenge.
We had it all covered up. It would have been okay, but whatever. It's cool. ALS has some more money. So there
we go. You're a good humanitarian, taking the ice and donating as well.
There we go.
What a guy. Also today is our guest co-anchor actually on Monday, every Monday, Lindsay Turrentine. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hello. Good morning.
So have you taken the ice bucket challenge?
I haven't. Shh.
Well, I guess if somebody nominates you, you would have to do it, right?
I would have to do it.
I won't suggest that to anyone. I promise I will keep my mouth quiet.
Nobody keep that very quiet,
will hear that idea. So, of course, I stand vulnerable as well here. I'm sitting in the ice buckets.
Yeah, I don't know if there's as much electronic over there either.
Yeah, they're going to have to cover this up if they do it. Right. So it's, instead of dumping an ice bucket on her head, why don't we do the news? What do you think, Lindsay?
I think we're ready. I think we can do this.
Let's do this.
Okay.
All right. Well, in the past few months, Twitter's been remaking itself in the image of Facebook. We've covered this story a few times, and the latest test has Twitter adding tweets to your timeline that you didn't post, favorite, retweet, or even see before. The tweets are either post-favorited by people you follow or even the people they follow. Once Twitter has inserted these tweets into your timeline, you can't remove them. Lindsay Turrentine, this is really kind of a weird thing, and what's really weird about it, I think, is that they have targeted, apparently they've targeted prominent users, celebrities and pundit types. I think that Peter Kafka at Recode, for example, was one of the people who got this feature, and pretty much everybody hates it.
Well, okay. So Twitter has to fix or continue to improve, let's say, its monetization problems. And I think it's very hard for anything to become sort of sticky on Twitter because the timeline, especially if you follow a lot of people, move so quickly. So regardless of whether regular users like this, it's probably really important for Twitter to get the news that it's starting to play with its algorithm, if you want to call it that, a little bit, because advertisers care. So if Peter Kafka writes about it, the right people are going to find out, and Twitter may not care if users think it's a little bit weird.
Yeah. Anna Kendrick, who's an actress, just simply posted, "Cut it out, Twitter." Really didn't like it. And of course, one of the problems with this is that it's based on favoriting, and people favorite tweets for all kinds of reasons, not necessarily because it is their favorite or that they like it. Sometimes they, you know, sometimes they hate it and they want to essentially bookmark it to come back to it later. And so they could be, and they could end up, you know, driving this tweet to somebody else's stream, and it's not even something that they would recommend. So it's to me, this is a terrible idea. We've talked about this a lot in this show, but it really, they're chipping away at what makes Twitter special, and they're making Twitter a second-rate, smaller Facebook, little by little. And I think it's the road to irrelevance for them. So I think this is a huge mistake, and hopefully they're, you know, this is a test. They haven't rolled it out to the public, and hopefully I think that they will realize that this is a big mistake and not do it.
It doesn't seem like it would be very effective. I mean, it may be a way to get some tweet variety or to get specialized tweets into other people's feeds so that advertisers can position themselves next to, you know, a tweet from somebody they want to be associated with. But it seems like it's such a small step toward bringing in, you know, more to sort of turning Twitter's feed into an algorithm-based feed like Facebook, that it's just going to annoy people and it's not going to solve their problems. And I think that Twitter's, I still think, I've been saying this over and over again, that Twitter is in a really rough spot because the fact that tweets come and go so quickly through your feed is a business problem for them. But yeah, it's also what makes Twitter special.
Exactly. I mean, you know, we need differentiation in social networks. We don't want all the social networks to be the same. And yes, the vast, you know, Facebook has vastly more users than Twitter ever will. And if Twitter can maintain and continue to thrill its most hardcore users, they'll have a smaller number of happier users. But by trying to go after Facebook's numbers, they're going to end up as neither getting the Twitter people nor the Facebook people. And it's a big, big mistake. I just would like to see these social networks be a little bit less greedy for, you know, the top spot and be happy with the second or the third or the fourth spot, really targeting something unique. I think Pinterest does a pretty good job of being unique. Although they're starting to do something similar. So I just think as a Twitter user, I mean, I like to use, you know, I think like a lot of Twitter users, I like to use both Google Plus and Twitter in different ways. And I think a lot of people like to use both Facebook and Twitter, and they use them for different things, not the same thing. So, you know, if Twitter stops becoming Twitter, then somebody else needs to invent a Twitter that is minimalist, that isn't messing with you and sort of using algorithms to manipulate you into engaging. You know, sometimes if I don't want to engage, I don't want to engage. And if I'm not engaging, that's because I've chose not to, not because, you know, all this kind of stuff isn't being inserted into my my stream. Well, it's an ongoing story, and we'll keep an eye on this. And I think at some point, Lindsay, somebody, you or me or somebody should write a big, big feature that chronicles the entire transition from where Twitter was toward Facebook with, you know, the big pictures and all the other things that they're doing to sort of chip away at the minimalist SMS-centric service that it used to be a few years ago.
Well, this is what happens when you go public,
yeah,
right? There's
exactly
a demand for growth that is so unrelenting that I think what happens is that companies who are pretty good at innovating don't have the time to find their own way of doing it. They just have to sort of frantically look around and say, what is everybody else doing? And try to build off that quickly. And it would be nice if Twitter had a little bit more time to figure out how to, say, target advertising on its own platform in a way that makes sense for, yeah, its own platform.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're going to talk about, speaking of social networks and companies that are using algorithms, we're going to talk about something Google acquired recently. But first, I want to tell you about our brand new sponsor, Lynda.com. If you're watching this show, that means you like to be the smartest kid in the class. That's why you're watching the show. And if you're one of those people, and you know you are, you want to also become a customer of Lynda.com, because they will teach you all the things that you want to know about all kinds of areas, unbelievable areas, everything from technology to programming to business to marketing to photography and video. It's such a great service, and I've really been enjoying it. They have industry experts. This isn't, you know, these aren't amateur hour YouTube videos. These are industry experts who know what they're talking about, and the videos are professionally developed. The curriculum is professionally developed, and it's super effective way for you to spend your time learning this stuff, just go to lynda.com. Now, remember that Lynda is spelled LYNDA.com. They also have great apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. I love the iPad app. I installed it on my iPad, and it's just such a beautiful experience. It's a nice way to relax and get smarter by taking these courses. Now, premium members with an annual plan can download courses to all these apps and watch them offline. Premium plan members can also download project files and practice along with the instructor. So this is really fantastic. I've been taking this class on photography, and I've always wanted to learn how to do what they call compositing in photographs. I love taking pictures. I love manipulating photos, but I've always kind of had this sort of, I have a self-taught way that I've been doing compositing. Now, compositing is when you take two images and you put them together into one image. So, for example, if you want to show a shark like attacking a helicopter or something like that, that's called compositing. We take one picture and then you put it into another picture. I've always had this like kind of weird way that I did it. And now, finally, I'm learning from an expert named Julianne Coast, who's an instructor on lynda.com. And I'm learning all these different ways, much more effective, much more professional-looking ways to do compositing within Photoshop, of course, but also the same information is valuable for other applications that allow you to do compositing. So if you follow me on Google Plus, and you're going to see some images with some really killer compositing, because I am learning so much at lynda.com. It's such a great service. 30% of colleges and universities, plus most Ivy League schools, offer lynda.com subscriptions to their students and faculty member, although, of course, lynda.com is vastly less expensive than university. One low monthly price of $25 gives you unlimited access to more than 100,000 video tutorials. If you think about this in terms of the cost of education, it doesn't get any a better deal than that. There's no way for you to learn this kind of quality education at a price like this. And we've got you covered with a special offer as well. You can access all of the courses for free for 7 days to try it out. Visit lynda.com. That's lynda.com/TNT to try out lynda.com. That's free for 7 days. Remember, that's lynda.com/TNT. And make sure you get the TNT at the end. That's for Tech News Today. And it will let them know that you heard about it right here. Well, Lindsay, Google gobbled up another artificial intelligence startup.
Yep. On Friday, the social travel startup Jetpack announced on its website that it has been purchased by Google. And not only has it been purchased by Google, but it is going to shut down the app by September 15th. It's removing it from the Apple App Store. And that's kind of all we know, according to Reuters. And here to talk about that is Stephen Shanklin, my coworker at CNET and an all-around awesome guy. And he has written about this acquisition. Stephen, can you tell us a little bit more about what Jetpack is and why Google might want it?
Yeah, sure. So Jetpack, it's pretty interesting little app. It's an iPhone app only. And if you want to try it, you have, as you said, 1 month before it gets yanked off the App Store. It analyzes photos that people have published on Instagram and finds cues like blue skies that might indicate a scenic vista, or mustaches that might indicate a hipster bar, or lipstick that might indicate someplace where there are a lot of women. It analyzes all this image data and then presents recommendations to people about where they might want to go. It packages it in a fairly simple way, top 10 lists for different cities. It's got 6,000 of these computer-created city guides, they call them. And it's an interesting idea. I suspect there are, you know, some issues they haven't worked out yet with, gaming the system or reliability, things like that. But overall, it fits pretty well with Google's operating methods, which is to look at data that's already out there on the internet, make something useful out of it in an automated way, and then present it to we, the users, present it to us. And so this is, they're not going to keep the app alive, but obviously some of the technology is going to stick around in Google services. We do know one thing about it, which is that this is going to become part of the Google knowledge team. These are the people at Google whose job it is to make sense of the world, to not just have a bunch of, static databases, but to actually have some comprehension, some understanding of what relates to what. These are the people who provide useful answers and search results, not just a list of links to websites you might want to go to. So, you know, this could become, I think, a, you know, a pretty interesting direction for Google, where they process more image data that's out there on the internet to make something useful out of it for the users.
The it's kind of a good thing that they're killing it, I think, because this whole sort of the analyzing photographs to figure out what's going on in different places and create city guides seems like it's fraught with peril. You could imagine all kinds of the wrong kind of pictures ending up in there and sort of indicating something that they don't really indicate. You really want humans creating city guides, I think, but clearly this is a technology play. The creator of this technology, let's see, what is his name? Well, anyway, they have other demonstrator apps that demonstrate the neural networking technology behind this. One is called Spotter, which identifies objects, and another one called Deep Belief, which can be trained to recognize objects. And that training, I suspect, is a big part of the technology play here because it can learn, and learning algorithms are a powerful thing. It's to me, though, this has got to be mostly an acqui-hire. Would you agree with that, Stephen?
I think it's likely. I think these guys have some good experience in the real world. They have some real technology that, you know, works at least to some degree. So I think this is not going to be something you'll see as a point product. This is going to be some technology that you see folded into Google's overall services like search and perhaps Google Now, Google Plus. There are a number of ways that this information could be, you know, shown to users. Google Maps is another one since it's linked to location. So I think this is definitely an acquisition for some people with some skill in, you know, an interesting domain that's very relevant to Google.
Go ahead, Lindsay.
I was going to say, we don't know how much Google paid for this. It seems like we'll probably never find out unless somebody just decides to leak that, but it might not be a big enough acquisition to merit that kind of digging. How much do you think it takes even for a team of people like this to basically cash out? Do you have any guesses?
No, these things often are in the range of millions of dollars. This is reasonably early stage. This isn't, you know, something like Twitter or Instagram that's got, a very large user footprint. So I think that's where you're seeing the big valuations these days is with apps that actually have, you know, a lot of traction. This, I think, is more of a technology demonstration than a force to be reckoned with on the internet, a company that other people are scrambling to follow. But that said, I do think that it shows some business acumen if you can actually put this stuff together in a way that works for users. So it's not just a bunch of nerds that happen to have some skill. You actually, it does show something if you can actually put together an app that works that people use. So it's nothing like the level of Instagram or, you know, one of these big social networks, WhatsApp. But I think it is, more than just a bunch of clever engineers.
And of course, the ugly elephant in the living room is advertising. They very well may use this to take your personal photos and figure out what sorts of things you might like to buy. Stephen Shanklin, you're normally in Paris now, and right now you're in where, Detroit?
Detroit for a couple of days, and then I'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area visiting with my coworkers for a week. So I'm looking forward to that.
So you're basically an American who's on vacation in the United States right now.
I'm on vacation all the time. Yeah. Yeah.
I imagine you having gone completely native in Paris, France, where you live. And now you're in Detroit running around in a panic looking for a good baguette or something like that.
It's rough. You know, the cheese, the baguettes. I miss my location services. I don't know where the boulangerie is. It's brutal out here.
There's no accordion music on the streets. It's awful. Well, I want to thank you for coming on Tech News today, Stephen Shanklin, and welcome back to the great Midwest of the United States.
Thank you.
All right. Stephen Shanklin is at news.cnet.com, and you can follow him on Twitter, and you should follow him on Twitter, at stshank. Thank you so much. Well, the personal information of some 4.5 million people has been apparently hacked in an attack originating in China. A healthcare company called Community Health Systems, which operates 206 hospitals in 29 American states, reported the breach today. Lindsay Turrentine, this is yet another case where one of the leading suspects is the Chinese army. the People's Liberation Army in China, what the heck they would want with a bunch of health records. It's actually not health records, just to be clear. They didn't compromise either financial data, no credit card information. They also didn't get the health data. What they did, what they were able to grab were things like name, you know, social security number, you know, phone number, all those kinds of details. And, you know, this hack happened some time ago, probably like a month or two ago. But this is really, you know, which is actually pretty quick if you compared to other hacks that have happened recently. But can you think of any reason, Lindsay Turrentine, why the Chinese army would want people's social security numbers?
I've been thinking about this, and my theory is that it's really more to prove they can do it. Right? Like, okay, what's a vulnerable system in the United States? Healthcare, that's a big deal. It's where a huge percentage of our economy comes out of our healthcare system. Let's see if we can figure out how to find our way in some way. And that's my theory.
All right. Well,
see if we can do it.
I think that's a great theory. They're essentially probing and figure out where the possibilities are, where the vulnerabilities are, and just harvest whatever data they can just in case they might need it someday. After discovering the hack, Community Health actually hired Mandiant. You know, you recall Mandiant in the news. Mandiant's report last year documented the operation of Unit 61398, which is a Chinese Army cyber war unit. Nobody has said that's the unit or that it was the Chinese Army, but what they are reporting is that the hacks appear to have originated in China. So we really don't know who's doing this. Or why they're doing it, but it's yet another case that kind of leads people to believe that nothing is safe, nothing is really secured. And you know, I would call on the people who have visited the hospital, track this story down, find the maps, because these hospitals are known hospitals. If you've been a patient at one of these hospitals, you need to contact them and find out what they recommend that you do about protecting your data, changing your information, or whatever it is that you need to do. I don't know what the recourse would be or what the threat really is. But I imagine, like so many other hacks, the details on this are going to be dribbling out here and there. And so we'll be doing follow-up stories on this as we learn more. Well, Lindsay, China's biggest Android phone maker really seems to like Apple.
Yes. So the Chinese manufacturer Xiaomi has launched a new version of its forked Android OS. So this is Android, but with a special Xiaomi skin. Just a reminder, Xiaomi is a Chinese-only manufacturer, but is growing very, very quickly. The newest version of this custom software has been rolled out to a small group of beta testers. But what's interesting about it is that it makes Android look an awful lot like iOS 7. It does some stuff like improves on the notification center. It looks very cheerful and colorful. And it, you know, a lot of people are saying sort of over and over again, this looks just like iOS 7. It's flat. It has sort of rounded corners on squares. It's pretty interesting. David Gilbert, who is a technology editor at the International Business Times UK, is here to chat with us about the changes Xiaomi has made and its ambitions. So, David, what about this new operating system or version of Android makes everybody think of iOS 7 so quickly?
Well, I think, Lindsay, it's pretty obvious from the minute you look at it that it just has obviously taken some design hints from what Apple has done previously. The lock screen, from the lock screen to what the icons look at. Xiaomi has even gone as far as showing different layers on its new OS, which is exactly the same as what Apple claimed when it launched iOS 7. So it's quite amazing, really. This is just the latest in a long line of allegations against Xiaomi that they've copied Apple rather than took inspiration from, which is what the company claims it's doing. It continues to claim that it's not copying Apple, that it's just taking inspiration from it. But they're kind of a lone voice where everyone else is really saying that this is out-and-out copying.
Android executive Hugo Barra left Google to go work for Xiaomi, and that was a big surprise. And since he's done that, a few other prominent Google executives have left to go work for Chinese companies. But he spends a lot of his time defending the company against the charge that they copy Apple. But it's kind of, as you said, it's pretty obvious that they do this. Can you review some of the ways that Xiaomi has done this, including the bizarre Steve Jobs-like announcement imagery that they've used.
Yeah, well, I think it's no secret that the company has kind of set out with a goal to become the Apple of the East, which many have dubbed it, and their CEO dresses kind of or imitates Steve Jobs when he's on stage wearing a black polo neck and blue jeans and white runners. And it even got to the point at the last presentation where in the whole 95-minute presentation, the last slide, the only one in English said, "And one more thing." It's just so obviously copying Apple. Yeah, there it is. But from as well as their latest phone, the Mi 4, which looks more and more like the iPhone, they've got a Mi Pad, which looks identical to the iPad Mini. They've got a media streamer, which looks exactly like the Apple TV. The company just it's finding it harder and harder to defend itself. And I think Hugo Barra has got a big job in his hands because he's head of global expansion at the company now. And as you say, they've become the number one smartphone maker in China, overtaking Samsung, and they're obviously getting a lot more attention, which means that similarities between their products and Apple products are getting a lot more attention in the media, which is why we're talking about it, I guess. And if they plan to move outside China significantly, they've already made kind of small steps in places like Brazil and Malaysia. But if they plan to move into the US, to Europe, to the UK, they're going to find it very hard to defend what they've been doing so far unless they make significant changes in the coming years.
So that if they come into the United States, and we've read some reports that Xiaomi wants to bring their hardware into the United States as early as 2015, do you think that they have a real set of legal struggles ahead and that this is close enough to iOS that it would create some real barriers to bringing that hardware in?
I think absolutely. I think in China it's a lot harder for Apple to defend their patents in that country because of the regulatory framework that's there. But as we've seen with Samsung in the US and in Europe, and with Apple and Google, you know, patents are what companies are looking to defend these days. And it's something that they find or they believe are really important. And Apple is kind of at the forefront of that, those battles across the world. And I feel that if Xiaomi do want to bring the product lineup that they have at the moment and the software to the US, they're going to find it incredibly difficult to or they'll find it almost impossible for before Apple will try and ban them from selling those devices in the country.
You know, having said all the copycat stuff, it has to be said that this is actually a really good looking phone. Of course, I think that iPhones are really good looking, and I really like iOS 8, but this is, you know, this is one of the better looking phones. And I have to believe, after all the reports we've seen, that they know that they're being accused of copying Apple, and that I've got to believe that that's part of their plan. They're really getting a reputation as the Android version of Apple, kind of, or the Apple version of Android or something. They're the Apple-like Android phone. That message is really getting clear and is getting across to Chinese consumers, and that
Absolutely.
Could be moving yeah. devices.
Absolutely. Like, the Apple brand and the Apple kind of the iPhone identity in China is obviously something that's hugely in demand, but it's hugely expensive as well for people there. And Xiaomi are offering that iPhone-like experience at a much lower price. So it's not surprising that they have done so, so well in that market in such a short period of time.
David Gilbert writes at ibtimes.co.uk, and you can follow him on Twitter at DAITHAIGILBERT. Thank you so much for joining us on Tech News Today, David Gilbert.
No problem, Mike.
All right. Well, a software developer / mom got fed up with her kids not calling her back, so she created an app that locks their phones until they return her calls. And now she's sharing it with the world. It's called Ignore No More. The app enables parents to choose whether or not to lock the phones, and when the phones are locked, it can be used only for two purposes, making emergency calls and calling mom. Ignore No More is for Android only and costs $1.99. As a mother, Lindsay Turrentine, what do you think of this?
Well,
pretty great,
my kids
right?
It's pretty awesome. My kids aren't quite to the ignoring me phase yet, but I'm planning ahead.
Oh, you just wait. You just wait.
Planning ahead. Although I was thinking about this on my drive this morning, I was like, okay, if I were the kid and this was on my phone and I felt like I was being manipulated into doing what I was told, I might just not call back and suffer the lockup just to freak her out. Because the reality is, as a mother, if I installed this and then I called and then my kid didn't answer and then they didn't answer, I would think they were dead, right? I'd be like, but I have the app. They're right. Locked out. Why are they calling me?
Right.
And it would send me into an absolute tailspin. So at first blush, it's like, oh, that's genius. And then I thought about it a little more and thought, I don't know. It seems to be asking for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we always talk about ways to inspire young people to become developers, to inspire girls to become developers. If anything will do it, I think this would do it. If you were carrying around a phone and your mom or dad had put this on the phone and essentially locked you out of your phone if you didn't want to call back, you'd be inspired to develop your own app that sort of overcomes app here that sort of, you know, ignore no more, or the ignore app. They call it ignore some more or something like that. that'll inspire kids, I think, to write their own software.
Just hack it.
Right. Yes. One thing we know about kids is they're very resourceful, right? And particularly about this, at some point they're going to figure out a way around it. What's to stop them from uninstalling the app? That I don't understand. Is this app able to block itself from being uninstalled on a device?
If only there was an Android app show that could test something like this and try it out develop. Yeah. Have you heard of any show like that? I mean, it seems like a really great idea for a show.
Believe me, I'm working on it. Android App Arena or All About Android. One of those two shows on this network.
All right. So we'll be watching Android App Arena to see the full test and see what's possible. My guess is that they would at least send a message to the parent saying, hey, this has been uninstalled. Or, you know, there are probably simple ways to do that. And of course, the other question is what happens when the phone is, you know, the battery dies or something like that. You know, that could happen. And Lindsay, as a Lindsay type mothers would freak out thinking, you know, something happened to their kids because they didn't call back or something.
Or the kid could just start their Android phone in safe mode. There is a way to do that.
Yep.
And then possibly that bypasses this. Not giving you guys ideas here, but there you go.
See, I think that the genius app, the app that needs to be invented, is just the guilt app.
Yeah.
Don't lock down the phone. Just guilt them. Right. Ping them. Persist. Like, do you know how hard I've worked for you in your future? You get texts that say, you know, I fed you every day. Call your mom.
And coming in the fall, nag for Android.
Right.
So we'll look for those. I've been noticing a growing arms race between parents and kids over these types of apps to control the kids and for kids to free themselves. There's that app in India that has been written to enable kids to make sure that their parents can't eavesdrop on their text messages and so on. So anyway, it's an interesting development. And just remember that the solution to good parenting is always technology. All right, you heard it here first.
Yep.
Well, in just a second, we're going to find out about something really cool, underwater software. No, I'm serious, underwater software. But first, I want to tell you about Squarespace, the greatest place in the world to build a website. Whether you want to build a blog or you want to sell things on a website or you just want to express yourself, you want to put yourself out there as your own personal brand, Squarespace is the place to do it. I've been using Squarespace for a long time. I think I first heard about it on one of the Twit shows, probably Twit itself. But ever since then, I've been using it and I absolutely love this site. I love to go to Squarespace and create new websites just for fun. To me, it's more fun than playing a game or something because it's so easy to do and it's so, you know, you can express yourself creatively. They have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with, but then you can modify them to your heart's content with their easy-to-use tools. You can add your own photography or images. You can do anything with a Squarespace website, especially if you know how to code. And if you don't know how to code, don't worry about it. It's all the tools are easy to use, and you don't need any experience or knowledge about building or maintaining a website to have a beautiful Squarespace website. They also have a logo creator tool. So if your website needs a logo, you can create your own. You don't have to go hire somebody and be dissatisfied with what they created because they didn't understand what you really want. You can create what you really want and do it yourself, even without any experience with design. The logo creator tool is sort of laid out in all of its glory at blog.squarespace.com, and you can check that out anytime you like. Now, Squarespace, of course, has e-commerce for all subscription plan levels. You can sell digital and physical goods. You can raise money for a nonprofit, you know, school fund drive. Doesn't have to be a, you don't have to be the new Amazon. You can just raise some money for some sort of school project or whatever it is that you need to raise money for. And it works perfectly with the Squarespace developer platform, so developers can create custom Squarespace stores with a totally unique design. You can even create flexible coupons that apply to all orders, so you can do all kinds of creative things that huge, sophisticated e-commerce sites do, but you can do it yourself, and it's really, really easy to use. They even have unified inventory management, express checkout mode, data export, social integrations, order confirmation emails, and so much more. It'll turn you into a completely professional business if you're selling things online. And Squarespace starts at only $8 a month. And that includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. So don't wait. Start your free two-week trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT, and that'll get you 10% off. And we thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. Lindsay Turrentine, underwater software, seriously?
Yeah, okay, I kind of love this. We know that some of the Sony Xperia devices are waterproof, not just water resistant, but waterproof. So Sony is trying to drive home that point and has released in the Google Play Store six apps for the Xperia Z1S phone, and they call them underwater apps, and they do things like there's one called Goldie, and there's a goldfish that lives on your phone, and when you put it underwater, it's happy and it swims around, and when you take it out of the water, it freaks out and gets sad. Another one is a submarine game called Sink Sunk that only plays when your phone is underwater. And there's one called Photo Lab where you take a picture, but it only develops when you put it under the water and move it around like it's in a dark room. So, this is obviously marketing. It's kind of genius marketing, because what they want people to do is be like, really? Okay, I'm going to try it. And then they tweet about it. Because wouldn't you? You tweet about putting your phone underwater and playing a submarine game.
Absolutely. What I want is I want a phone app and the hardware to go with it so that I can have phone calls while I'm doing laps in the pool or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
How fun would that be to be like, you know, it's like something like that. That'd be really cool.
You know, I mean, that in itself, like if you are a hardcore swimmer and there's something it can do underwater, then that sells the phone.
Yeah.
Maybe Sony get on that.
Well, Sony, when they first came out big with the Android phones that were waterproof, they had ads showing people taking pictures underwater in the pool and stuff like that. Basically, it's an underwater camera. And I thought that was really great. And I really liked that feature. And it's so compelling to me that because I like to spend as much time in water as I can. And the idea that you could use a phone underwater, take pictures, take video underwater, and just have it be your regular phone, I got really close to buying one of those things, but unfortunately, it's a Sony.
At CNET, a couple years ago, Molly Wood dunked one of them in a vat of liquid chocolate.
Ah.
Yeah, it
was
works.
It chocolate proof?
It was still fine. It's chocolate proof.
They should really advertise that.
They really
it's
should.
Really tough. Although it did kind of, I think it might have in the long term mildly damaged the rocker switch, but it still works. That phone still works.
Unbelievable. They should come out with under chocolate apps. Let's see. And we should all get a commission for suggesting it on this show. Well, in other news, The Onion is hilarious, but Facebook users routinely think their prankish humor articles are real news. So Facebook's testing a new feature that labels links to The Onion articles as satire, clearly. They won't spoil it, though. The tag is only displayed after a user has clicked on the link and then returned to Facebook. Fascinating. I love it when people fall for Onion articles. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's something that's lost in translation, and people who have only a tenuous grasp on the English language don't recognize that it's a satire, because some of the satire is, you know, almost believable. That's what makes it great satire. So it's probably a good idea to do that. It's probably a good service on the part of Facebook to do that, because, you know, these things have become runaway memes where people believe some Onion story is actually true. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Melissa Good in Pembroke Pines, Florida, who posted this picture on Twitter of her of TNT on her giant screen TV. It's a nice bike there as well. So that's a great way to watch TNT on a huge television set. How do you watch or listen to TNT? Just take a picture of your setup, post it on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook using the hashtag How Do You Watch TNT, and we will find it. That is the tech news today. Lindsay Turrentine, thank you so much for joining us today on every single Monday.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Always fun to have you on, and look forward to next Monday right here at TNT. See you then. All right, well, you can subscribe to Tech News Today, and we want you to subscribe. You can subscribe on iTunes, Feedly, Stitcher, YouTube, RSS, Yahoo. So many ways to subscribe. Just go to twit.tv/TNT. And you can follow us on Twitter. Tech News Today TV is our Twitter name. Please send us your thoughts and opinions. Just send email to tnt@twit.tv or leave voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And don't miss our evening newscast, Tech News Tonight at 4 p.m. Pacific tonight and every weeknight right here on the Twit Network. My name is Mike Elgin. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you tomorrow.